Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
Preparing for the long haul. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal. Along with Gina Cervetti, it is Tuesday, July 29th. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Israeli officials are warning citizens to prepare for a drawn-out campaign against Hamas in Gaza. Meanwhile, last night saw some of the most violent fighting in 3 weeks.
The Ukrainian military has made quick gains against pro-Russian rebels in recent days near the crash site of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17.
With Dollar Tree buying family dollar stores, we'll identify five things you may not want to purchase at a dollar store.
And the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees are committing billions to fix problems at troubled VA hospitals.
It'll be used to hire doctors, nurses, care providers. It'll be used for veterans who are waiting a long time for an appointment or don't have a VA facility close to them to be able to get coverage from non-VA doctors.
Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Kessling on the $17 billion committed to fix wait times for veterans who need care. He's here in about 10 minutes. Some say last night was the busiest one yet of Israel's effort to knock out the military equipment and underground network of Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Israel's leader said they were escalating the campaign there and told the country to prepare for a prolonged operation. Meanwhile, Secretary of State John Kerry still calling for a ceasefire.
Make no mistake, when the people of Israel are rushing to bomb shelters, when innocent Israeli and Palestinian teenagers are abducted and murdered, when hundreds of innocent civilians have lost their lives, I will and we will make no apologies for our engagement.
More now from Wall Street Journal reporter Joshua Mitnick, who's with us today from Tel Aviv. Joshua, what do we know at this point?
We know that the IDF carried out dozens of strikes overnight, shelling and attacking from the air targets in the Gaza Strip. We also know that the IDF distributed warnings through leaflets to a number of Gaza neighborhoods, warning civilians to evacuate. Another sign that the ground campaign looks to be expanding. However, despite those attacks from the air and despite the leaflet campaign, we haven't gotten any word yet that the IDF has expanded its footprint on the ground in the Gaza Strip. But according to signs that we got from Prime Minister Netanyahu and the defense minister, that seems to be where they're headed.
You get the sense that this was perhaps the most violent night of the 3 weeks so far?
From what I heard from our Wall Street Journal correspondents in Gaza City, it was definitely one of the worst nights for them. They described explosions very close to their hotels. And the other thing that happened overnight was the IDF attacked the house of Hamas Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh. He was not in the house at the time, but it shows that the IDF is starting to turn up the pressure on Hamas by going after its leadership.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Joshua Mitnick, who's with us this morning from Tel Aviv. All right, that said, Joshua, how much further, say, could the IDF turn up the pressure?
Well, I think the many in Israel will tell you that the IDF has actually only advanced towards the very eastern, the eastern and the northern outskirts of Gaza's neighborhoods. So their footprint within the Gaza Strip isn't that deep. They could go much further. Israeli politicians still defining a very limited goal for the offensive against Hamas, eliminating the tunnels, trying to reach some sort of long-term, very long-term ceasefire, but not indicating that they are seeking to oust Hamas, despite the fact that there is widespread support in among the Israeli public for a complete defeat of Hamas.
Let me ask you this. What is life like in Tel Aviv right now where you are? Are people on edge? Are things normal? How would you describe it?
Well, if you you came and you walked around, you wouldn't be able to tell. There's a war going on about an hour's drive south of the city. But then if you would talk to people, they would tell you that they're on edge and they're, you know, and if you spent enough time in the city, maybe once a day you would hear a siren go off and people scurrying to take cover. But people are definitely, it's definitely difficult for people, even though it has no, there's no real comparison to what's going on, to what the civilians in Gaza are going through.
Thanks, Josh. Wall Street Journal reporter Joshua Mitnick with us this morning from Tel Aviv. 12 minutes now after the hour. The U.S. is accusing Russia of violating a 1987 missile treaty by testing a new type of intermediate-range cruise missile. More now from the Wall Street Journal this morning's Jennifer Koshinka.
The U.S. yesterday said Russia violated the Intermediate-Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, which regulates the production, possession, and testing of nuclear and conventional ground-launched missiles, which can travel up to 3,400 miles. Administration officials didn't specify when they believed Russia tested such a weapon, but said the alleged violation would be discussed in a report that's expected to be released today. The INF Treaty was signed by President Reagan and Soviet counterpart Mikhail Gorbachev 27 years ago, aimed at eliminating a group of weapons that were of increasing concern to Europe. Gordon?
Thanks, Jennifer. In the Journal today, by the way, it says, adding to the deepening tension between the two countries, President Obama sent a letter to his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, outlining the U.S. allegations and demanding Russia return to compliance. There was no immediate reaction from Moscow. 13 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
I own a growing company, and predictable monthly expenses make it easier to run my business. That's why I switched to the T-Mobile Simple Choice for Business plan. We get unlimited data with no overage charges, all in America's fastest 4G LTE network. Now it doesn't matter how much data my team needs every month. My bill stays the same. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change. Fastest 4G LTE based on download speeds. See T-Mobile.com for details.
House and Senate negotiators have introduced a $17 billion package to begin addressing long wait times and mismanagement at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Kessling says it's considered a down payment on a broader reassessment of how the agency provides care to veterans. He joins us on the T-Mobile hotline. Ben, how would the money be spent?
So it'll be used to hire doctors, nurses, care providers. It'll be used for veterans who are waiting, either waiting a long time for an appointment or don't have a VA facility close to them to be able to get coverage from non-VA doctors. Those are two of the biggest aspects of this. The bill also includes a provision to allow the Secretary of the VA to more easily discipline and fire senior executives at the VA who are underperforming, and it provides for leasing of some 27 different medical facilities across the U.S. and in Puerto Rico.
So why in the past was it so hard to fire someone who was a senior executive at the VA?
Well, senior executives have a lot of rights, due process rights built into their jobs, and some people say that those protections are necessary. Some people say that those protections are detrimental to allowing the secretary to actively be able to fire people, and it's going to be made easier with this bill.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Kessling. And what's been the response from the people who've been most vocal about wanting to make changes at the VA?
A lot of people, especially a lot of congressional representatives and senators, are coming out saying that they support this as a move to help fix the VA. And a lot of veteran service organizations are happy that this money is being provided. But there are some veteran service organizations who have expressed concern, that said, well, you know, this money that will allow veterans to go outside of the VA to get care doesn't necessarily fix the VA itself. They'd rather see all this money being spent on doctors and nurses in the VA system rather than allowing patients to go out into the civilian world to get care. They say that the VA is uniquely equipped to help veterans with their suite of problems that typically just veterans face, and worry that this fix could divert attention from more long-term issues at the VA.
So what are the next steps now, Ben, when it comes to rehabbing the VA?
Well, the nominee, President Obama's nominee to take over as Secretary of the VA, Robert McDonald, he's a former CEO of Cincinnati-based Procter & Gamble. He looks like he will be confirmed by the Senate sometime this week. He's already been endorsed by the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs that happened last week. The current acting secretary, Sloan Gibson, has been doing a lot of outreach, getting out, talking to veterans, taking care of the backlog of veterans who are waiting a long time for appointments, and trying to clean up a lot within the VA system itself. No way to really know how far along we are on the process of taking care of a lot of these issues, but Congress is acting on it, the VA is responding to it, and the public has been paying attention to it. So changes have been underway.
Thanks, Ben. Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Kessling. 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. Federal air safety regulators are proposing a $12 million civil penalty against Southwest Airlines. This stems from a contractor's allegedly improper repairs to some of its Boeing 737s. The FAA later approved repairs after Southwest showed that they met safety standards. Leaders of the House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee have reached a deal on a bill that provides about $17 billion in funding to ease long wait times at VA medical centers. Here's House VA Committee Chair Jeff Miller.
Helping to get veterans off of waiting lists is extremely important, and this bill does that. It also holds people within the department accountable.
The agency has been rocked by scandal over cover-ups of wait times, leading to the resignation of former Secretary Eric Shinseki and allegations that veterans died awaiting care. Liberia has closed borders as West Africa tries to stop Ebola's spread. The virus has killed around 670 people. Meanwhile, at least 1,200 have been infected, including Dr. Kent Brantley of Texas and North Carolina's Nancy Reitbull, both aid workers in Liberia.
Sometimes we think real heroes are athletes or celebrities that make millions of dollars, and we think the real heroes are people like the Reitbulls.
Pastor John Monroe is with Charlotte's Cavalry Church. Now, the CDC says that infection on an airplane is unlikely, and that most flights from West Africa to the U.S. are not direct. Israel's leaders say they're escalating a military campaign in Gaza and have told Israelis to prepare for a prolonged operation. So far, the assault on Hamas rulers has reportedly cost more than 1,100 lives in Gaza. Israel says that close to 60 people have been killed. A Fed meeting starts today, and we'll get the latest on consumer confidence. In the meantime, stock futures are down following a little change day. The Dow rose 22, the S&P added less than 1, the Nasdaq fell about 5. Australian prison officials are thinking that maybe these guys have done this before. 4 inmates on a work detail escaped, got drunk, then staggered back to their cells where officials found liquor, pot, and cell phones.
Do you think that they were at a bar and then just glanced at their watches and said, yikes, we got to get back, fellas. Lights out at 11 or something like that.
Who knows? This might be a regular thing. And how is that happening exactly? Minding these guys out on the work detail, I wonder?
Might be time for a little supervision of the supervisors on the work detail.
There you go.
23 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. Good Tuesday morning. We are not using as much electricity as we used to. Sales of it are expected to be down for the seventh year in a row, even though, as Americans, we're plugging in more gadgets than ever. So how can utility companies manage their rising costs when sales of their main product have stopped growing? Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Smith has been exploring the trend. Rebecca, what's happening?
There have been big shifts, like population migration continues to warmer states, so people need less power to heat and cool their homes. But we're also seeing that a lot of companies are installing their own forms of generation, or they're installing a lot of energy efficiency equipment. So basically, machinery requires less electricity than it did in the past, and more companies are making their own power. In general, you know, things are much more efficient than they used to be. I mean, for example, cooling and refrigeration requires much less power. And in industrial applications, the motors that most companies are using today are much more efficient.
Why have companies gone in the direction of creating their own energy? Are they just fed up with paying the cost?
I don't think they're fed up with the price so much as there are many companies that have environmental goals they want to meet now. So they're installing a lot of solar panels. And, of course, the price for doing that has dropped dramatically in recent years. And now you've got companies like Walmart that have goals to generate the equivalent of 100% of the electricity they consume from renewable resources, in many cases by 2020 or 2025. So they have very ambitious targets they're trying to achieve.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Smith. And how are utilities responding to this?
Well, I think initially utilities thought that after the peak year in 2007, and then when they saw drops in 2000, you know, the 7 years subsequently, they thought that things would bounce back. And they thought that because traditionally electricity sales have tracked GDP, but now in the seventh year they're seeing that things are not bouncing back. So they're trying to become more involved in this shift to distributed generation, like solar. They're spending more and they're becoming more involved in projects. So they're trying to develop new revenue streams and new areas of growth.
So for people who still rely on utility companies for the majority of their power, can they expect prices to go up?
It is getting more expensive, and I think that's one of the factors also in the reduced consumption. The average retail consumer today is paying around 12 cents a kilowatt hour, so it has been steadily creeping up. And one reason for that is even though natural gas is cheap, so a lot of the electricity is being made cheaply, there's still a huge cost to keep up the wires and the energy delivery part of things. So utility costs are continuing to rise.
Thanks, Rebecca. Wall Street Journal reporter Rebecca Smith. Sales volume matters when it comes to electricity because when utilities are flush with cash, they buy lots of expensive equipment and raise dividends for investors. When they're selling less, they look for ways to cut or defer spending. 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Quick, convenient, and most importantly, easy to use. That's how you can describe Stamps.com. It will make your mailing and shipping a breeze. With Stamps.com, buy and print official U.S. postage using your computer and printer. There's nothing to learn. Stamps.com will give you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage for any letter, any package. They'll even help you choose the best class of mail to get your mail there on time for the least amount of money. Then drop your mail into any mailbox or hand it to your mailman, and you're done. Mailing and shipping has never been easier, and you'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, use the promo code WSJ for this special offer. A no-risk trial, plus a $110 bonus offer that includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in WSJ. That's Stamps.com. Enter WSJ.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal this morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, July 29. Gordon Deal sitting alongside Gina Cervetti. Top stories today: escalating violence in Gaza, a rare tornado in Massachusetts moving forward with the sale of the LA Clippers, and five things not to buy at a dollar store. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. The Dutch government says forensic experts have been unable to reach the crash site of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 for a third straight day because of explosions and fighting in that area of eastern Ukraine. Wall Street Journal reporter Lucas Alpert says after the horror of luggage, plane parts, and hundreds of bodies raining down on them, many people in the village of Petropavlivka had hoped the catastrophe would force a move toward peace, but the mayor there says it's actually getting worse. Lucas joins us now this morning from the Moscow Bureau. Lucas, what has developed here?
Government forces have really been pushing to kind of cut the rebel-held territory in two. So where they've been coming in is from the south of where the crash site is, and they've made some pretty heavy gains, it seems like, in the last couple of days. They've now pushed really pretty much right up onto the crash site. They're also coming directly from the north, and they seem to be moving quite steadily forward towards cutting the rebel territory in half. Yesterday there were reports the rebels sort of acknowledged that they had lost control of one of the towns where the debris from the plane had landed. As you might remember, the plane is spread out over three or four villages in that part of Ukraine. So that's where it stands, and it's unclear, you know, how heavy the fighting is this morning.
All right. So how have the Ukrainian forces been able to make progress?
Well, they've been basically since the downing of the plane, they've really actually kind of stepped up their offensive. I think that episode really probably put the rebels on their heels a bit. And I think that the government appears to have wanted to take advantage of this. And so they've actually cut their territory quite dramatically in the last 10 days or so. This has been going on for some time, but you know, now they've really pressed into where the plane had gone down, which had been in very solidly rebel hands at the time. But now it looks like they're losing control over there.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Lucas Alpert from the Bureau in Moscow about the heavy fighting around the Malaysia Airlines crash site in eastern Ukraine. You point out in the story that people in this one village of Petropavlivka kind of thought the worst of this was over, right?
Yeah, I mean, they really had, a terrible experience with having this plane come down. I mean, this is a small village in a farming community. They weren't really quite prepared or equipped to deal with, you know, hundreds of bodies and all this debris. So I think that they were pretty scarred, if you will, by that experience. And now this is an area that actually hadn't seen really any combat prior to the last day or a couple of days, that had been firmly in rebel hands. It hadn't been a battlefront, but now that's moved into that. Apparently, the rebels were saying that the government had been using quite heavy artillery fire. So, if that's true, that's a pretty kind of frightening situation to find oneself in. So I think that they're in a kind of an ugly spot today.
All right. Wasn't there a kind of an agreement of some kind to stay away from a large part of the crash site?
In the days after the crash, the Ukrainian government had said, in an effort to kind of try and get investigators to the scene and to, remove the bodies when they were still there, they had said that they were going to give a 40-mile diameter clear zone around the crash site. It's a little hard to tell now. I mean, they still insist that they haven't violated this. The rebels say they have. It's not 100% clear exactly, where, it's a long battlefront, so it's hard to say exactly where they are, vis-a-vis the actual crash site. The rebels said that they had lost control of this one town. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're fighting. They may have pulled back. It's all very fluid, so it's really hard to say. But, the rebels do say that the government has violated this area. Seems like that's probably a good chance that that's true, although it's hard to confirm.
Thanks, Lucas. Wall Street Journal reporter Lucas Alpert from the Moscow Bureau. 21 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Don't forget, check out the new WSJ radio app. Brings the latest episodes of the Wall Street Journal this morning and all of your favorite Wall Street Journal radio programs to your fingertips. You could download the WSJ radio app for iPhone and iPad at Apple's App Store. Also, investigate the MarketWatch radio network app, also free for iPhone and iPad from Apple's App Store. Don't forget to follow us on social media, by the way. You can friend us on Facebook. On Twitter, we use the handle @WSJ this morning. The Wall Street Journal this morning's Mike Gavin is here now with a look at some of the stories we're following today.
Well, Gordon, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is telling his citizens to brace for a long fight as Israel gets set to escalate the three-week-old conflict in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, West African countries are scrambling to contain a deadly outbreak of the Ebola virus. So far, over 1,200 have been infected and more than 600 killed by the disease. Here in the States, the CDC is warning healthcare professionals to be on the lookout for signs of Ebola in their patients. Also making news this morning, Donald Sterling and his estranged wife Shelley, but this is potentially good news as a judge has finally approved the sale of the Los Angeles Clippers to former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer for $2 billion. Gina will have more on all of today's top stories with America's First News coming up. And Gordon, Toronto Blue Jays outfielder Melky Cabrera is trending on social media this morning after he hit two home runs in the Jays' 14-1 win over the hapless Boston Red Sox last night. Wow, that championship did not last long, did it, in Boston? Now, it wasn't so much the homers that people are talking about. However, it's where the second one landed. After taking a very quick trip over the Green Monster, the ball made a beeline for a fan's car, creating a ball-shaped dent in the SUV's windshield.
Really? Well, that's funny. You know, I just happened to be watching the Mets for a couple of minutes last night, and they cut to a highlight of the home run. So I saw it go over the wall.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of fans tried to jump and catch it as it exited the park, but I didn't see what happened about 5 seconds later.
Yeah, if you watch replay of the video, you can see the fans who watched it. They tried to grab it as it went over the wall, and then they watched it fall, and then they were pointing down.
Oh, I see. I didn't see that
at the car because they saw that the windshield got broken. But the good news is I would think that if you're parked that close to Fenway Park, you probably have a little bit of money. I'm guessing. So you probably can afford to get your windshield fixed.
Unless it was just the unfortunate coincidence of a poor guy like you or me who happened to get tickets from a rich guy for last night's game.
That is possible.
Right, we pull up in our car.
That is possible. You know,
we take the hit.
Hey, look, that's the risk you take. I mean, I know when I go play at my old man's softball games, even at those games where it's a softball and the ball is not traveling very quickly at all, I park far away because I do not want my 10-year-old truck to be dented by an errant softball. So you take that risk when you park next to the stadium.
Very good. Thank you, Mike. It is 15 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
As the owner of a delivery company, I have to be in constant contact with my drivers, the warehouse, and my customers. Between scheduling appointments, using GPS, and tracking orders on our smartphones and tablets, we were going way over our data limit every month. That's why I switched to T-Mobile Simple Choice for Business Plan. My company gets all the data we need without worrying about unpredictable overage charges. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change.
Thanks for being with us. How about this? Sunscreen is getting an upgrade in the U.S. The House last evening passed a bill designed to require the Food and Drug Administration to more quickly approve new formulations of sunscreen for sale on U.S. store shelves. The agency has not approved a new sunscreen in a decade and a half, despite that better melanoma-fighting ingredients are widely sold in other parts of the world. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman in Washington. Michelle, what's taken so long?
The FDA has to approve a new ingredient every time that it's added to a new sunscreen. And for the past 15 years, they haven't approved any new ingredients whatsoever. So basically, we are using sunscreens that are using 15-year-old technology.
As opposed to much of the rest of the world, which has better stuff than us?
As opposed to all of the rest of the world, which is using much better stuff than us. And this is stuff, Gordon, that is much better at protecting us from skin cancers, melanomas, which is the number one type of cancer in the United States. They're ingredients that better block out UV rays. They more easily get lathered on the skin. They last longer.
Why has the U.S. been slow to adopt this or approve new suntan lotions?
So that's a good question, and no one really knows. The FDA has been saying that it is facing some sort of a regulatory backlog, that it doesn't have the resources to shepherd these ingredients through the approval process in a timely manner, even though they are a priority for the FDA. And you know, no one has really been able to figure out why. Hmm. One of the major problems is that the process that the FDA is using to approve these new ingredients has no deadline. There are no time limits imposed on them.
Wow.
And so Congress is stepping in and saying, we are going to impose deadlines on each of the steps of this process to ensure that the pending ingredients are approved within a year of passage of the bill.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman. Who are the companies trying to put a better sunblock on our shelves?
Yeah, so L'Oreal, a company called BASF, and Ashland are three of the really big ones. Together, they represent 5 of the 8 pending applications. And I've actually spoken to representatives of some of those companies. Someone at Ashland said that they had gotten an assurance from the FDA in 2009 that they would approve their ingredient, and they actually went ahead and expanded one of their plants in Columbus, Ohio, to start producing more of the sunscreen, and they've just been exporting 100% of that.
So with Congress stepping in, when can we expect new products hitting store shelves?
So the House of Representatives just voted last night to approve this bill, and there's a nearly identical bill in the Senate right now that is going to hopefully pass through committee and be voted on in September. So assuming that President Obama signs the bill in the fall, assuming it passes the Senate, we could have new sunscreens within about a year of that on shelves.
The wheels of government grind to a halt. Still going to be another year after the president signs it, at least. Wall Street Journal reporter Michelle Hackman. It's 8 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back. She has America's first news.
Good morning. A new Government Accountability Office probe shows that more than 80,000 Defense Department workers in sensitive settings owed more than $730 million in taxes to the federal government. Investigators argue that chronic indebtedness could make people susceptible to pressure to compromise their classified access. A rare tornado touches down just north of Boston, Massachusetts, damaging dozens of buildings and causing other destruction, but no reported serious injuries. Residents were being asked to remain patient as officials took steps to deal with the damage. Revere Mayor Daniel Rizzo.
First, obviously, our primary roads and then our secondary roads. But we're going to make sure that roads are passable.
Embattled L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling has lost his attempt to block the team's $2 billion sale to former Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer. A judge sided with Sterling's estranged wife, Shelley, who negotiated the sale after the NBA banned the 80-year-old Sterling for offensive remarks. Stock futures are a little on the positive side now after a narrowly mixed close for Wall Street yesterday. The Dow was up 22, the S&P gained about a point, the NASDAQ lost almost 5. Investors look to the Fed meeting that starts today and also this week's economic reports. In the meantime, pending home sales fell in June.
This is after 3 consecutive months of increase. So with any data, it shows a little volatility, but this is a slight down from the high level we saw prior month.
Lawrence Yoon is with the National Association of Realtors. GM's chief financial officer tells the Journal that the $2.5 billion set aside this year for recalls will have no impact on plans to speed the pace of new model rollouts, saying GM will look for ways to offset the costs, including efforts to cut overhead. Most of us consider 37 to be young, right? Most of us aren't in professional sports, though, where that can be considered getting up there. San Diego Padres pitcher Jason Lane just made his major league career debut and, well, won't be too long before he's 38. The Journal says that since 1914, only 8 players have been older in making their first major league starts.
Pretty cool. He did well, too. He pitched into the 7th, only gave up 1 run, but they lost 2-0.
Yeah,
got no offense,
he got the loss,
last night, but good for him. Nice conversion, too, from outfielder to pitcher. Good for him. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. With Dollar Tree's announcement that it will buy Family Dollar stores for $8.5 billion. Go figure that, right? I thought everything was a buck. Here's a primer from MarketWatch on what not to buy from a dollar store. Number one, bath towels. The brands in the discount stores tend to fade, shrink, and curl faster than higher-priced towels. Instead, experts say hold out for January white sales at stores like Macy's. Number two, children's toys. A lot of toys that end up on shelves at dollar stores are from the last season or toys that didn't sell so well in places like Toys R Us. Water blasters might leak, for example. Number three, shampoo and conditioner. Although these may seem like a good deal, dollar store shampoo and conditioner selection is limited to just a few lesser-known brands. Number four, food and drinks. While dollar stores obviously have bargain basement prices, soft drinks are cheaper, usually when they're on sale or sold in bulk at grocery and big box stores. And finally, number five, back to school items. Walmart was recently found to have better deals on things like a 3-ring binder, 4-ounce glue, and a 64 package of crayons. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. For more, follow the Wall Street Journal this morning on Facebook and Twitter, and now on TuneIn.